Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. This is week 51. Next week will be our 1 year anniversary of doing the Raw Rundown. So I'm joined, as always, by David J. J for J&J Security McCutcheon. Hi, David.
Oh my goodness, Kenny! I thought it was for J for the Road Dog Jesse James. It turns out it's J&J Security. Jamie Noble prying open the car door from the ambulance to make sure that Braun Strowman was okay. That's the type of courage that I exhibit. I'm happy that you see it that way. How's everybody doing? If you're not a Patreon subscriber, go and donate the money right now to hear one of the best podcasts Kenny and I have ever done.
It's $3 level. It's literally less money than buying a bottle of Coca-Cola and a chocolate bar in a convenience store.
It's true, and it won't kill you either.
I don't always put over
our work on Patreon, even though it's fantastic. We always give it our all and everything. But whenever I specifically mention how good a podcast is, then that tells you, hey, it's even better than the high quality that we usually put out. Go listen to that one. It's really fun.
People have been really digging it. We talk about Great Balls of Fire for almost 90 minutes, and we also make fun of people who pour their guts out on Facebook, like Farrah. And you know, like
the banter is top notch. It's great.
Good bands. But we're here to talk about the fallout from Great Balls of Fire. That's what we're here to talk about. Monday Night Raw, live from Houston, Texas. The most boring city that I've ever been to the host of WrestleMania.
Really? Is that so?
Oh my god. I think it's more got to do with the layout of Houston. Like we were staying in this kind of like area where there was a lot of kind of like businesses and like Hiltons and Marriott's. And it was very kind of like, it was like a metropolis. It just looked like every city. There was nothing unique about where we were. And I'm sure there are better parts to Houston. I unfortunately did not get to see them. So, sorry.
I mean, Booker T, the worst color commentator in the history of wrestling. Sorry, Mongo McMichael. he'll be the mayor of Houston soon, you know.
Do you think that he'll just like find younger women and talk down to them about their accomplishments? Oh, no, that's Raw Talk. Sorry.
It's not a good premonition there, right there.
You mean a premonition?
Premonition.
But we're here to talk about Raw. Lots to talk about. Lots of stuff to talk about in this Fallout show from Great Balls of Fire. So let's just get straight into it. Let's just whip it all out right now.
All of it? I mean, you usually you just gotta do a little bit of a tease and showcase a little bit, Kenny.
Well, I mean, you whipped all of it in Orlando, and I was like, "Is that it? Is that all you got?" And then Val had to come and whip hers out, and it was, put it away.
At that point, you realize who wears the pants in the family because she has to.
If she doesn't wear them, then it's just a schlong fest. Anyway.
Right. Just people die.
Enough about Val's dick. We had an even bigger dick start the show. It was Big Cass who came out. Big Cass came out. He got a lot of boos. He did the how you doing thing. He cut a very passionate promo about Enzo Amore and what he did to him. He like narrated some stills of what he did to him at the pay-per-view. He talked about, you know, he's here. He's going to be on top of WWE. He wanted to say to all the doubters in NXT and backstage that he's going to be the Universal Champion. He's going to shove it down everyone's throat. He's going to headline WrestleMania. He's going to be in the Tonight Show. And no one's on his level because no one can look him eye to eye. That brings out Big Show. Big Show comes out to a pretty good ovation. Big Show comes in and then just headbutts Cass. They have a brawl where Big Show gets the best of it and then Big Cass flees. And it goes up the ramp. I thought this was really, really good. I thought Cass did a really good job, and I thought Big Show was utilized pretty well here. And I think that if given the right time and the right situation, they could have a really good kind of big man brawl at SummerSlam. What do you think of this opening segment? Cass's big kind of moment away from Enzo. How did he do?
I thought that it was really good. He kind of... It's funny the parallels between his promo and Enzo's promo from the night before, because I thought that it started good, and the more it went on, the more he kind of trailed off a little bit. I dislike whenever wrestlers get into hyperbole too much, whenever they, you know, like him going, I can't wait to represent the WWE on the Tonight Show, and I'm going to be the Universal Champion, I'm headlining WrestleMania, and yada, 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 and, you know, automatically we're like, you're not Roman Reigns. So,
where's my ice cream bars?
So, yeah, for me, I dislike the hyperbole and that such stuff. So it kind of lost me on that, but up to that point, I thought that it was really good. The passion he showed was great. He was getting nuclear heat, which was really good.
Do you know what I thought he did quite well? Is see when he showed the clips on the Titantron, he didn't seem very scripted, which I thought was a good thing.
No, not at all. Not at all, yeah. No, that it came across as very genuine, you know? But the more it went on, the more it felt like an NXT promo class. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, what I thought was quite interesting.
I'm going to be the man. I'm going to main event WrestleMania. And I'm just like, okay, that's what everybody in NXT says.
But when he was on the 24 special on WrestleMania Monday that they did, and it covered like Enzo and Cass's debut, like, people in NXT legitimately thought he was shite.
Oh, yeah.
So...
No, you could tell there was a little bit of venom in that bite. Whenever he was searing those guys in this promo. It was really good, and I think that the Big Show is a perfect feud for him, for both guys, actually. It does Big Show some favors because it puts him with a guy who has a lot of potential, and it does Cass a whole lot of favors because it pits him against somebody who's actually a star in the industry.
Yeah, and like, and I know some people were kind of complaining about Big Show getting the best of it. I kind of thought he needed to. Because ultimately, know Cass is going to get Cass is going to commit this on top. So I kind of like the idea that like Big Show just headbutts him, and like if you're in a fight and you're not expecting it, and a guy just headbutts you, you're going to be sort of beaten down.
Yeah,
like that's how fights work.
Right. It felt genuine. A lot the main event from the night before.
I remember ten years ago, I was walking across a bridge in Glasgow. And I got attacked by three guys. And one of them just punched me in the face.
You beat them all off, right? I mean, like, you know.
Well, beat them off means something very different over here. But anyway, I didn't whack
off. That's what I meant.
Oh, okay, you meant I just whacked them off. How many hands do you think I have?
line up, boys. Kenny. Utilize those feet.
The point is, with these three guys, and this is legit, a true story. I've never been to fight in my life, but these guys were coming across a bridge. And I sensed there was trouble, but I thought if I just kind of walk past, I'll be okay. And one of them just punched me in the face before I could do anything. And all I had enough in me to do, as the three of them were trying to like get the better of me, was to kind of just pie face one, kick the other, and shove the other, and run. Because there was three of them, right?
Yeah, but like, yeah.
Had I been walking onto that bridge knowing the fight was going to happen, I'd have been prepared. I would have had a game plan. But if you don't have a game plan in a situation and a fucking giant headbutts you, you're going to get taken down.
Yeah. No, it's – I mean, even if you're prepared for the Big Show to headbutt you, he's going to headbutt you. He's bigger than you.
I can confirm that. The Big Show is, in fact, bigger than me.
Yeah. I mean, and you can't teach that, Kenny. I don't know if you knew that or not, you know.
You can't. You cannot teach that. I've tried.
Hold on one second, Kenny. I need to go in and get a drink of water, okay? You can go ahead and pause the podcast. I'll be
okay,
right
cool.
back.
Okay, cool. Okay, guys, I'm not going to pause the podcast. Shut up. Right? Don't say him. I'm not going to pause the podcast. David hasn't watched the wrestling matches on the show. He's only watched the talking segments. So I'm going to, like, put some stuff in that never happened. And we won't tell him and see if he cocks anything. Okay, guys? Right, so just keep shitting.
All right, Kenny, or let's see.
Cool, let
All
me
right,
just
I got this. Yeah, go ahead and start it up again. Let me just record.
Okay.
We can kick this off where we left off.
So we did Big Show Cass.
Sure.
And we'll go from there. But yeah, right. Like I said, we'll just kind of we'll breeze through the match stuff and just kind of concentrate more on the promo parts.
Sure. That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. So from there, we had the sort of summation of what happened the night before with Braun Strowman. We're going to have an update on him later on, which I love that there was no update, but they kept hyping there was going to be an update. I'm like, why are you hyping an update? There's no update. Fucking hell.
We have a reporter out in the middle of the desert looking for him. Don't worry, you guys. As soon as we find out where he is, he's still covered in blood from the night before, and he's like fucking 7 feet tall. If we find him, it's going to be easy to spot him from a mile away, you guys.
I think
it's going to be great.
I think there's still a reporter in the desert looking for Samoa Joe and TNA. Anyway. We go from there, and we have Elias Samson in the ring, strumming his guitar, and he gets interrupted by Finn Balor, and we get the Finn Balor versus Elias Samson match. Pretty basic match. You know, it goes about 10 minutes. Balor obviously gets the coup de grace for the win. I mean, I think it was the right decision to pretty much just have Finn win one match, and that's it, right? Like, that's kind of the best way to do it.
Immediately put him like right behind him, get this match out of the way.
I think, like, if you'd have told me going into this that Elias Samson would hit a hurricanrana on Finn Balor, I would not have expected that was
it was great. He did it rather flawlessly too.
Yeah, like you would have thought he was like a high flyer guy, but so yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
Finn Balor gets the win, coup de grace. We then go to the Hardy Boys, who come out as Finn is leaving, and they congratulate Finn, and then they get in the ring and they kind of talk about, you know, what's next for them. Jeff said, you know, a few of the tag teams think we're done and maybe we should fade away and classify ourselves as obsolete. And then Matt said he was going to make a proclamation. He said, you know, we may be scarred, we may be whatever, and we may be somewhat broken, but they weren't going anywhere. Was it just me that got slightly hard when they did the broken matches? There was a slight erection.
There was some real funny feelings. It just felt like I had to pee constantly while I was watching this, Kenny. It was very arousing. I love the Hardys. This is so good. They would not be teasing this like this if they weren't finalizing something. Meltzer is also of the same opinion. You guys, we might be getting a little bit broken in the near future. And it seems that these guys are now on a losing streak. So, I mean, that
want to say, literally about 20 minutes ago, as we're recording this, I don't know if this is good or bad, but somebody tweeted at Jeff Jarrett and Ed Nordholm and said, are you guys going to drug test Alberto El Patron, or is all your money going towards fucking with Rebby and Matt Hardy?
Oh!
And Matt Hardy responded to this and tagged Ed and Jeff and said, if Ed Nordholm and Jeff Jarrett don't wrap up this situation with us shortly, it's going to get terribly nasty. We have lots to expose.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. But, like, I would be very, very surprised if WWE were allowing them to make those kind of references. Like,
you don't tease that if you don't have something big planned.
That's what I think. So hopefully, so they have this kind of promo about, you know, what's going on. Then Gallows and Anderson come out. They talk about, you know, they're the magic killers. And then Matt and Jeff said, well, we're not 100%, but if you want to come out and, you know, give it a go, like, come on, let's go. They have a match. And in the end, Gallows and Anderson get the better of the banged-up Hardys, and they get the win. And as Gallows and Anderson are celebrating, the Revival come down to basically return to the main roster.
Yay!
Yay, top guys. And they walk past Gallows and Anderson and go and just beat up the Hardys. Do you know what was great about this? Was the Hardys used them being banged up to make two other teams look better and elevate them.
How great is that? And they here's the thing, Kenny. Here is the thing.
I was literally taking a drink as you did it, so that counts.
Here's the thing, though, Kenny, is they didn't lose for so long on the main roster, the Hardys, that whenever they lose now, it's a big deal. If there wasn't 50-50 booking. So now they're losing, and you're like, oh shit, the Hardy Boys are losing? As opposed to, oh, well, I guess the Hardy Boys, it's their turn to lose this week.
Yeah, exactly.
It actually matters!
It's good. Yeah, no, it was a really effective segment, really well done. And yeah, I thought it was really good, and I'm glad the Revival are back, and I think that them coming back and beating up the Hardys was a great way to kind of reintroduce them.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. This was good for, in all honesty, especially if this leads to the brokenness, this was good for all three teams equally.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Now, obviously, we Inside the Ropes are a big fan of The Mizzies, the greatest awards show.
Of course, yeah, the most prestigious, as it were.
I do want to say, if you didn't get a chance, it is really worth going on the network and going to Raw Talk from Great Balls of Fire and going to about 18 minutes in and just watching the last 5 minutes where The Miz comes out. And he and Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel are excellent in that segment, because Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel both cut promos on how they were being underutilized. Miz talks about, you know, these guys are doing dark matches and they're third generation superstars. I'm here to show what they can do. And, you know, he's like lording it over Renee Young that he beat Dean Ambrose. Really, really good. Showing why The Miz is... I'm so glad that even coming to Raw, he's still nailing it. The guy's great.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's funny, too, because I feel like they put The Miz in these segments all the time just to sort of see if he's going to fail or not. Because, I mean, this is something that could easily go bad.
How the fuck did he make The Mizzies good?
Like, exactly. They like constantly set him up to fail, and he constantly does his best to succeed or make it look good. And this was fine. You know, it wasn't. It didn't light the world on fire or anything, in my opinion. But
it wasn't the best thing he's ever done. But this was passable. It had any right to be.
Right. If anybody else did it, well, just about anybody else, excluding say Paul Heyman. But you know, if anybody else did it, this would have been like, this is your life bad, you know?
Don't you wish LeVar Ball was involved? Fuck. But yeah, so basically the Miz gives Mizzy awards to Bo Dallas, Curtis Axel, Maurice and himself, and then Dean Ambrose comes out, starts brawling, the Miz Taraj are taking him down, and then Seth Rollins runs down to help clear the ring. Part of this is because the Miz made fun of Seth Rollins earlier on in the promo. And then we cut backstage where Ambrose kind of goes up to Rollins and says, you know, what are you doing? And Rollins said, well, I'm not going to let Miz, you know, run me down. And Ambrose says, you know, there's not going to be a Shield reunion. I remember what you did to me. Stay out of my business. Fight your own battles. Do you know what was great about this? Was Dean Ambrose was doing exactly what he should be doing, which is not trusting Seth Rollins because he fucked him 3 years ago. Continuity!
Continuity, it made sense. I agree with Dean Ambrose. You can forgive, but never forget. And that is absolutely true here. I love this. I absolutely agreed with Dean Ambrose. I related to that. And it felt like, I don't know. It felt like, you know how you feel whenever you've had a really bad day, Kenny, and you just like get a big chocolate chip cookie or something delicious,
mm-hmm.
and you just shovel it down your throat and you go, oh my God, that was so good. That is the wrestling equivalent to what this is, right? Like
what was so good about it was is that
I Dean digested Ambrose, this and well, I was Dean, like, oh,
Dean Ambrose
so
has
good.
Been doing some good stuff with The Miz, but we've seen the matches a million times. But for whatever reason, putting Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins in something together where you're kind of like the tease of the Shield, but the tension they've got going on infinitely makes both of them more interesting.
Infinitely. Because let's be perfectly honest. The most interesting thing that any of these three guys have ever done was team up together.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
And so automatically, whenever we get that tease that maybe they're getting back together, it immediately rejuvenates these guys.
Yeah, and props to WWE, because they could have been really lazy and put Ambrose and Rollins together, and the fans would have probably just bought it, but I thought this backstage bit here nailed it. Great. Great stuff.
No. It was excellent. I saw Brian Alvarez complaining that Dean Ambrose looked like the bad guy here. No. No, Brian, I love you to death. That's dead wrong. Because if somebody fucks you over and physically hurts you and breaks up your meal ticket and removes a big chunk of how you make a living, I don't know, man. That's betrayal, and you never forget betrayal. There are people, Kenny, in my life who have been friends of mine for 15 years, and they badmouthed me whenever my mom died because I was holding a fundraiser for her to help some sick animals, and they badmouthed me for begging on the internet. Two guys, particular, I'll never forget them. And I've forgiven them. I'll never forget that, though. If they were drowning right now, I would sit there and I'd cross my arms and I'd stare into the lake where they were drowning. And I'd go, do I want to do that? And then I would remind them of it before I eventually went back in and saved them. So just saying, you can forgive. Never forget, Kenny. Doesn't make you a bad person. Makes them a bad person for betraying you in the first place, Kenny.
I mean, if that doesn't give you things to think about of a St. Louis Shield, I don't know what does. They're not like main event in WrestleMania. They're fighting over animal fundraisers. Like, that's where the real shit goes down.
It is.
Dead people and animal fundraisers.
Saved a lot of animals that way, Kenny. All they did was bitch about it behind my back. I'm just saying, I'm the good guy in that situation.
Fuck them.
Yeah, right? Like, seriously. Also, don't you ever betray me whenever I'm holding fundraisers for animals, Kenny. Because I'll never forget.
The thing is, I feel like if somebody comes up to you, right, they go, by the way, you know, really serious situation, one of my family members has died, right?
Right, right.
You pretty much can hold an S&M fundraiser. I have to support it. Because it's one of your dead relatives. Like, the only things that I'm not going to support are like a pedophile fundraiser or like anything like that I'm not going to support, but anything that, like, I can't say anything bad if you're like, oh yeah, my mum died, so I've decided to hold a fundraiser for midgets.
The midget wrestling.
Then I have to support it. I have to go. And eat the very tiny cubes of cheese that are cut up for midget people and not me. I need to eat like five of them to get one cube of cheese. Anyway, I digress.
But who complains about that? Like, oh, their exact thing was, wow, how petty of him to raise money in such a manner.
I don't even understand the bitch. I don't even understand what the complaint is.
Beyond me. How beneath him to beg people for money. I'm like, wow. And then, meanwhile, these are the same people who are holding Kickstarters to buy themselves new Nintendo DSs and whatnot. So, you know, I mean, people, man, people.
I feel like we really escalated away from the show.
way away from the show. That's infinitely.
I feel like it's got so long. It's not even like we just touched on it. It's like you're literally sitting just going, people, man, people. Like,
yeah.
We were reviewing wrestling, David. Let's get back to it.
People are terrible, Kenny. That's essentially betrayal.
I like people who care about people who care about themselves. Anyway, up next, Sasha Banks.
Just never let anybody tell you that Dean Ambrose is the wrong guy in this feud. That's all I'm
okay,
saying.
Okay, you went round and round a bit a couple of times, but you got to the point. Sasha Banks and Bayley team up to take on Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax. Sasha and Bayley get the win over Alexa and Nia, with Bayley getting the pin on the champ. It was fine, 10 minutes. Any thoughts? I mean, obviously, I don't know if, like, Alexa doing the disjointed thing here again. I mean, it feels a bit much to do it for, like, a third time now. You know, to do it at the pay-per-view was cool, because it was, like, it hadn't really been seen on Raw yet, but I don't know, I thought doing it again was just kind of like, you know, you're giving away one of your tricks a bit too many times.
Yeah, you don't want to show off the pony too much before the pony competition, Kenny, so to speak. not that I would know anything about pony competitions.
Fucking hell. Pony competitions? What the fuck are you talking about?
Dog shows? Would that be a better analogy?
Stop talking about animals! It's not the fucking Raw Rodeo, it's the Raw Rundown.
it's a good analogy though, right?
No, it's you not.
Okay. Kenny. Mm-hmm. You're at the dog show, right? You have the most beautiful dog on the planet.
Where else would I be? Apart from fucking animal retreats and dog shows, right? I'm at a dog show.
You're showcasing your pup around, right? And meanwhile, all the competition, they're waiting for the big reveal for the puppies, right? They bring them out. The judges go, wow, that's a brand new dog that I haven't seen 4,000 times. Meanwhile, you're trotting that damn dog around the judges going, look at my dog, look at my dog, look at my dog.
My dog is Alexa Bliss's arm, is what you're saying.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And Jesus and she's showing her arm off too much.
I feel
much.
Like I should be doing audio subtitles for you.
Would the subtitles be like, this is the general direction that David is going with his analogies?
You may think that David has lost his fucking mind and just talking about animals, but actually he's taking it back to Alexa Bliss's gammy arm that she had on Raw. Anyway, I feel like maybe we're going to get a four-way at SummerSlam with these four.
Could be.
I think that, like...
It's too early for, like, a direct rematch. Usually for, like, these big events, they don't really have, like, a one-on-one match with the women. For whatever reason. I don't know why.
Also, I don't think any of these four are in a hot enough program that you go, okay, it should only be two of them. I think here, more than WrestleMania, you could actually get away with just saying, just put these four in a match for the title at SummerSlam. Give them 15 minutes. It should be pretty decent.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, I guess we'll get to these one-on-one confrontations at the big four pay-per-views, but...
But then we're not gonna get it at Survivor Series either, because we're going to get Team Raw versus Team SmackDown.
It's Rumble at the earliest. It's really weird how they've done this, but it all has to do with poor booking, though. And obviously, I don't think anyone would argue that the booking's been horrible for the women on Raw. So, and SmackDown, really, for that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think Raw's been worse. But yeah, poor Mickey James. Poor Mickey James.
Right.
Weird issue.
Yeah, right. Like, if there's one thing that I've learned is if you are a veteran in the wrestling industry, do not come back to the WWE. They will treat you like Rob Van Dam. They will treat you like the Dudley Boys. They will treat you like Mickey James.
To be fair, Rob Van Dam looked like a bag of shite. Dudley's, I'll give you, they could have done something. But, like, Rob Van Dam, he came back. He looked like he was fucking shopping in Walmart for his pizzas. He did not look like a guy who was... The only night that he seemed interested was that Money in the Bank night they returned. And then he had his feud with Del Rio and his lesbian assistant that they were fighting over.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Not that that's a bad thing.
No, nothing.
Like lesbian, we love lesbian assistants here.
So I guess that may be the direction for SummerSlam is the four-way. We got a video from Goldust, the Shattered Dreams video, saying that there's going to be a sequel to the Shattered Truth. And then they have a match, the match that's been building for about 6 weeks. Goldust won.
The longest build on the planet, Kenny.
Well, they also had a very similar long build to getting together as a tag team. Goldust won here in 5 minutes, and I love Goldust and I love the promos, but my God, this was dull as dog shit.
This was one of those situations where the build is obviously much more inclined. I mean, it only lasted 5 minutes, Kenny. It's hard for the build that's been lasting 2 months to live up to that, for the match to live up to that kind of hype, let alone a 5 minute match. It's rough.
Yeah, it was bad. Plus, I don't think people give a fuck about R-Truth anymore.
No, they don't.
What's up? Nothing.
So
I loved it. Corey Graves, what was it he said? Somebody tweeted it to us, and it was really, really good. It was like when R-Truth was coming out, Corey Graves said, he's been singing this song so long, and he still doesn't know the words. Corey Graves, my favorite commentator in wrestling.
No, he's the best. Love him the best.
Up
so
next,
funny.
We get Kurt Angle coming out. He's getting the You Suck chants. By the way, if you've not got a chance, ladies and gentlemen, the WWE 24 special on Kurt Angle is exceptional. I would thoroughly recommend it. Maybe a scene or two where you might be chopping some onions, if you get what I'm saying. But it's so great. I'm so happy for him that he's back. He talks about Great Balls of Fire, and then he brings out... He says that Braun Strowman refused medical treatment. He doesn't know if or when he'll return, but the show must go on. And he brings out Brock Lesnar, who makes his entrance along with Paul Heyman, obviously. And Angle and Lesnar have a kind of cool moment, you know. The main eventers of WrestleMania 19. Then we have Kurt Angle talking about, you know, we should talk about who's going to challenge Brock for SummerSlam. And Paul Heyman's like, we don't do creative meetings in the ring, Mr. Angle. That should be for backstage. You deal with your own cell phone issues and we'll be in the back. Which Paul Heyman, exceptional as always. Roman Reigns comes out, the big moment everybody's been waiting for. And let's just talk about this incident before we talk about the rest of the segment. But basically, Roman Reigns comes out, and Kurt Angle... It starts well, because Kurt Angle's like, you've got a lot of nerve coming out here after what you did, or after what you pulled. And then Roman Reigns' defense was, after what I pulled, I'm in here with you, Brock Lesnar, and the father of hardcore, and you're telling me I went too far? Reigns said, you were all part of the Attitude Era, and you destroyed everything, blew everything up. And Kurt Angle said, well, that is then, this is now... And
You don't see Mae Young flopping her tits out on pay-per-view anymore either. I'm just saying.
Thank God. So before we go on, I mean, I think that there is a point that, like, you know, in 2000 they did do shit that, like, I mean, there was no comeuppance for. But somebody else brought up a really good point where, like, on SmackDown, James Ellsworth was fined $30,000 or $25,000 for interfering in a match. Roman Reigns attempted murder. Couldn't you fine him something? Just be like, look, I'm fining you $50,000, but you're too big a part of you've got rid of Braun. I've got a show to run. I need you here. I'm annoyed that I have to keep you, so I'm going to fine you, but you're staying put. That would have at least made sense. But to just have nothing, it's like, do you know what? See... When people don't get behind Roman Reigns, it is things like this. You're not fucking helping the guy because he's coming out here with no fucking reasoning or anything. And it's like, I'm not blaming Roman Reigns, the performer or the guy, but please God, Mr. Anawahi, can you have the balls or have the tenacity to at some point go, guys, this particular aspect of the story does not make sense. Let's come up with something that makes a little bit more fucking sense.
You know, I will blame him as a person as opposed to as a performer. Because
blame him as a person.
I do. Oh, I do. Dude, because,
go on.
Because here's the thing, Kenny.
Oh,
after you beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, you have free reign to do anything you want to. You know? You can go around and you can treat people like shit. You can veto ideas. What are they going to do? Take you off TV? They have already fucking staked the company for the next 20 years in your honor. So, no, it's on him as a person and as a professional to go up to creative and go, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. You need to, people like Roman Reigns are very rarely in, people in general are very rarely in the position that Roman Reigns is in to make these kind of calls and to make these kind of decisions. He has a rocket strapped to his back and he's going to the moon in WWE. He will be the next John Cena. He will be the next guy, the next top guy for the next 15 to 20 years, Kenny. And if we're going to sit here and act like everything that he does is A-okay and he can just nod his head and go along with it and cash his easy paycheck, that's fine if you want a very bland, boring, stupid program to invest in. But if you're truly great, Roman, if you're truly actually great underneath it all, underneath how you're booked, underneath what the pencil says you do that night, then you would go up to creative and go, no, I'm a man, I have balls, I'm going to assert myself into this and make sure that this gets changed, because I'm not going to put up with this. This is going to get changed, and I'm going to make more logical decisions in my career, because these people are dictating the way that people will view you for the next 50 to 60 years, so long as people remember you. And this is the way that you're allowing them to dictate your future? Are you serious? If that were me and I had that type of pull, there's no way. There's no way, Kenny, because I would want to be remembered more fondly than as the guy who was a yes man that just sat and nodded along and cashed a paycheck.
Now, it is easy for us to sit in this position and say all that stuff. However, I agree with every single thing you've said.
Yeah, and I've done it at work myself. I've staked my personal career whenever I am handed stuff to do that makes no sense for the company and it makes no sense for me. I will assert myself and go, I'm not doing that. That needs to go to somebody else. That's not what this is. It's not going to make us more money. And the same thing, it's applicable in this situation too with him. If it's not going to make them more money, then why are they even doing it?
My favorite sign on Raw was a sign that said Rikishi drove the ambulance. But the thing is, I still think the moment on its own was great. Like, I loved the moment. You know, we talked about it on Patreon. We actually both said, yeah, you know, as a sort of moment on its own, it was great. It's, you know, the follow-up's part of it. I think there is an element of, like, when Braun comes back, what happens? Because to be honest, see if Braun is cemented as a big babyface out of this, I couldn't really care what Roman does. Like, go crazy, do what you want. But anyway, so that's the Roman aspect of it. It's also interesting to me that if 2 years ago, if going into WrestleMania 31, they had turned Roman Reigns heel and had him go heel for 18 months, so through WrestleMania 32, through SummerSlam 2016, I am confident that he is a talented enough guy that he could have turned babyface by Orlando this past year and got a good reception from the audience in the main event. But instead, that's not the route they've chosen. Anyway, so that's the beginning. So Roman Reigns is basically saying that because he took he took out Braun Strowman, and he said, he basically said, I took out Braun Strowman, you two should be thanking me. And he said to Kurt, because you don't know how to handle them, and then looks over to Lesnar and says, and you're never around to do it, which was a great line. I'll give
great
him
that. Line.
Great line.
Yeah. Whoever wrote that for him deserves a raise.
I love that you're just like, oh, the little digs are great. So whoever wrote that for him, great. So glad he got to deliver that paid.
Yeah. Yeah, he did it so much better than anyone else could have, yeah.
So Roman then said, you know, he did them a favor and he's owed one, and maybe that's Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. And then Brock Lesnar takes the microphone and says, you've got to be kidding me. You actually think you deserve a shot at this? You don't deserve shit, buddy. Brock Lesnar, the greatest human being. I'll be honest, I don't care what anybody thinks. I fucking love Brock Lesnar, and I would have him be champion for the next 12 fucking months, because when he's on, he's untouchable. He's great. So
McIntyre spitting fire, you guys.
Brock Lesnar's not around that much. Oh, so you mean when he's around and he has big time matches, it elevates people? Oh, no. I should be doing it more than the New Day. Oh, no. Yeah, but I mean, see, when Brock Lesnar wasn't around, he was Universal Champion, then he came back and Samoa Joe choked him out, and now Samoa Joe's a star. Oh, my God. What a terrible world to live in. If only we could have not had Brock got back and had Samoa Joe be 50-50 booked on Raw. That would have been so much better, you guys. Oh, God. Anyway, sorry. I digress. I'm being bitchy. I apologize. Anyway.
What would you do? Welcome to my world, Kenny.
So,
Would you like to adopt a dog?
I'm not doing any more of your fucking fundraisers. Giving you enough money. So Brock says to Roman,
got fucking Sarah McLachlan over here with the ESPCA doing commercials.
Anyway, so Brock says that this is as close as Roman's going to get to the title, and he was like, you don't deserve it, my man. And then Samoa Joe's music plays, he comes out, and he says, aren't we all living in a wonderful fantasy land? Let me just bring you back down to reality. And Lesnar said, reality was, I kicked your ass. Which, again, like, Brock Lesnar's such a dick. It's so good. And then Joe, but then the greatest part of it is that Joe nailed this promo. Really nailed it.
He was a star, Kenny. He was a star.
He talks about how, you know, don't worry because sooner rather than later I'm going to put you to sleep. Joe then said, you know in your heart of hearts that you didn't beat me. You escaped me. Oh, so good. But, you know, Brock shouldn't be around because, you know, this is just, it's really, really hurting Samoa Joe's cred. Anyway.
By the way, how outclassed did Roman Reigns look in this segment standing next to Joe and Lesnar?
I know, but that's it. Roman Reigns is, it's like, right, say you were in high school, right? Roman Reigns is the high school jock. He gets all the girls, he's good looking, he gets straight A's. Brock is Biff from Back to the Future. And Samoa Joe is the weird kid that listens to goth music in the corner. But then, like, 10 years later, the jock is the dull guy, Biff runs an empire, and the goth guys all of a sudden become really interesting. And that's what these three are. Samoa Joe ends up going on and saying that, you know, Roman Reigns, you've never beaten me. And then Paul Heyman tries to get... tries to tell Samoa Joe that Roman Reigns should be the opponent because he's the one that put The Undertaker on a Samoan trophy case, but Joe's been excommunicated, which to me it came across like Paul Heyman was scared of Samoa Joe getting another shot at Brock Lesnar. That's how I took it.
Which is how Samoa Joe phrased it as well.
And then...
He said, listen to your advocate.
Oh, and then there's this great bit where Lesnar starts looking at Roman Reigns, and Joe says, you better look at me or we're going to have a problem.
Oh, that was...
Look at me when I'm talking to you. You're like...
Yeah. Oh, man, that was great because you could tell that was ad-libbed.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Joe just pulled that out of there, and then Brock, you could tell he got, like, fired up from it.
And then there's the bit with Joe and Roman where Joe's like, oh, yeah, you should be getting a title shot given that you were beaten by Braun last night. And Roman gave as good as he got, and he was like, you know, well, look where Braun is, and look where I am now. And it was a good back and forth. And then Kurt Angle did a really good job of always trying to step in between them and looking absolutely terrified that this is going to kick off. And it's all going to culminate next week with Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe, number one contendership match for SummerSlam. Kurt Angle said, if you guys get physical, I'm canceling the match. It's not worth it. Don't do it. So what did you think of the segment overall, the direction, and the participants involved?
This needs to be a triple threat. It needs to be. It has to be.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I disagree with you. I do not think it should be a triple threat. Here's what should happen. Next week, Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe will take each other to the limits of physicality. But the sirens will play, and Big Brawny Baby will return, and he will demolish both of them so that at SummerSlam we get a fatal four-way match for the Universal
Championship. I'm okay with that, too. But it can't be a one-on-one encounter.
Oh,
can't.
Not Roman and Lesnar, no way.
God damn it, Kenny. You scared the shit out of me. I was literally about to quit the podcast.
At least you were
being dramatic. I can't associate with him. He's a sociopath. He wants to see Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I can't associate with that man.
Then we get to New Orleans.
5 years of friendship down the drain. Can't do it.
Then we get to New Orleans, and I'm like, hey, let me drive you to the Superdome in an ambulance. Nothing's going to go wrong. There's fundraisers in here. The thing is, like, all joking aside, I would be... And I know that, you know, Dave Meltzer said that the plan as of like 2 weeks ago was Roman and Brock at SummerSlam. But I think that the way that Samoa Joe was made to look here, I would be very surprised if he is not involved at SummerSlam. And he should be.
I would be utterly shocked because if there's one man who has become a star in 2017, it's Samoa Joe. And that's not just Brock Lesnar fighting him and quote-unquote making him a star. He's made himself a star with his performance. Because a lot of guys had, like Roman Reigns, he's had that podium for so long and he's done nothing with it. Absolutely nothing. A garbage performer in terms of a character. In terms of a wrestler, I actually like Roman. He's pretty good. But in terms of a character, no. Garbage.
And I actually think if you're going to do, say you're going to do Roman and Brock at SummerSlam, right? I think adding Joe in there for any of the outcomes makes the match better.
Because anytime there's another variable, sometimes you just want a one-on-one contest. Joe and Lesnar, I wanted that to be a one-on-one contest, right? But with Roman, nobody wants him to actually win. What, like 15% of the populace? No, I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. That's ludicrous. So adding an extra variable there keeps things exciting. It keeps things fresh. You don't know exactly what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. And even then, let's say Roman pins Joe and wins the title. That sets up the rematch for Survivor Series or whenever between Lesnar and Roman. You know, which that's like the worst possible outcome, in my opinion. but like that, even then, that adds the variable in there. So, you know, yeah. Well, it's an out, basically.
And, you know, the thing is, if you put Joe in there, like, there, you know, Joe could win the title, and then Roman has to beat Joe, because I think that one of the things that's really interesting about this whole angle is that Roman Reigns has never been able to beat Samoa Joe.
Yeah,
and I think that you should.
It's not like they did that shit clean necessarily,
but
yeah,
that's fine. Like, but the point is, use that and pay it off properly. It's too big to pay off on Raw, in my opinion. Right. So, sure. I hope the next week, because if they have Roman beat Joe next week, I just don't think it really helps anybody. I don't think it helps Joe. I don't think it really helps Roman. And I think you've got something with Joe right now.
Yeah, no, you got to strike while the iron is hot right now, because it's totally awesome. You need to go for it with Joe. He's too good right now to not move forward with him.
Backstage, Kurt Angle's looking at his phone. He's shaking up. Cody Graves comes in. They've got the same text. Angle said he's going to have to go public next week. And Cody Graves kind of tries to reassure him, says it'll be fine. Everybody loves you. Kurt Angle looks quite upset. We'll talk about that at the end. It's Purple Ropes time. Cedric Alexander and Akira and Tozawa against Neville and Noam Dar. I completely fast-forwarded this because Purple Ropes do not interest me. What did I miss?
You missed a basically just a standard tag team match on 205 Live. You've got Tozawa hitting a dealie where he knocks over Neville onto the ropes, kind of doing the crotch chop from the night before, kicks the rope, the old nut spot falls over, and Neville gets pinned. By the way, the ref was watching this the whole way and was just like, yeah, sure, nut shot. But Tozawa pins Neville, quote-unquote, clean in the middle after the nut shot. And, yeah, so, I mean, the champ just got pinned. I guess the Titus brand is getting that rematch that Tozawa was wanting. So, just treading water until the division implodes.
That takes us to the main event, which is Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt. And the match goes about 18, 19 minutes or so. And in the end, Bray Wyatt takes advantage of Seth Rollins' injured eye from the night before. Wyatt performs Sister Abigail again and pins Seth Rollins clean two nights in a row for what seems to be the end of the feud. Bray Wyatt victorious and has won a feud, David.
A feud with a former world champion, Kenny. And it wasn't even Jinder Mahal. Jesus,
don't
fuck.
You dare try to hurt me like that. Don't remind me that sack of shit.
It won't be long, Kenny. It won't be long until Randy Orton pins him or escapes the
Punjabi
prison.
Anybody. Ty Dillinger pin him. Anybody.
Ugh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. So, Kenny, a little bit of controversy, and it's unrelated to Raw, but fuck it. I am officially in the camp to see Randy Orton pin or do whatever he has to do to beat Jinder Mahal in that stupid cage match.
Oh, you want him to win the belt back?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just get it off of Jinder. I don't give a fuck who wins it. Put Roman on that brand. I'd be like, ooh.
Yeah, I'd buy the fucking vest.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could borrow Kyle's vest. We could take turns wearing Kyle's vest and fucking cheer on
that's
Roman.
It. I'm telling you, that's Jinder. The way to get Roman over. Have him beat Jinder. I would pop so hard.
He'd be mega over with the ITR clan all of a sudden. Yeah, so,
well,
yeah.
Well, Steve Mayer on our Facebook community, or as my mum calls it, the community.
The community.
He was talking about, you know, the fact that gender is kind of like this thing where people, like, there's pro-gender crowds in the arena. And I'm like, I get it that, like, you want to ironically like something or dislike something. I completely get it, and you paid your money and you do what you want. But if you genuinely think that gender is a good fit for WWE champion, then you have horrible, horrible taste. This is not a subjective thing. This is not like, oh, well, some people like, you know, blue tops and some people like black jeans. No, you have horrible taste. This is not a question. This is not an opinion. This is 100% fact. It's like we know three things in the world. The sky is blue, the grass is green, and your taste is horrible. Just go away. No longer watch wrestling. You are not good for this. Go watch UFC. Go watch Bellator. Go watch GFW with, you know, domestic abusers. Whatever you want to do.
Oh, man. That's a whole other can of worms.
Never been happier to cancel a show. Jesus Christ. You know, can I just say something very quickly about that?
Go ahead.
Somebody sent me the audio of Paige and Del Rio, and they said, you know, what do you think of it? And I opened up the page, and I was about to click on it, and I was like, I don't want to hear this.
No, like, I completely agree. I'm so happy you said that. Yeah.
And do you know what else is like? I'm not trying to defend Alberto El Patron or Jose Rodriguez, whatever you want to call him. What I will say is I spent a little bit of time with him, and he spoke to me in what I felt to be a very sincere way, and still do. And I think that as outsiders, it is very difficult for us to all pin every part of the blame on him.
Right, right.
Now, all signs do point to the fact that Paige has been hit at some point or in various points, which I do not condone in any way,
horrible,
shape, or form.
Horrible, yeah.
But I think that what we need to do is there's a culture now where it's like we all think we know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us know what's going on. So I think sometimes it's like, I just wish the best for everybody involved. I wish that I think that Paige should get away from him ASAP. Yeah. And I think that sometimes it can just be that, like, two people get together and they are an awful fit for each other.
Yes, it happens a lot. It truly does.
And again, I'm not saying that, like, you know, that he's innocent at all. It's I'm not there, and it's very hard for me. And then you've got, like, Paige's brother is, you know, putting statuses out saying that, you know, he's worried that she's going to become the next Whitney Houston and Amy Winehouse and all this sort of stuff. It's really sad and horrible, and I just hope that, I hope somehow there's a resolution where both of them can separate and find a way to move on positively. That's my hope from it. Because right now, it's not looking good. And it's looking like it's going to... And you know, the one thing I think that actually is a big issue out of this, and I'm not... I know people are going to be joking, but WWE, for all that you say about them, try and help performers all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, I watched the Kurt Angle documentary, and one of the most emotional parts of it is Vince McMahon talking about, you know, you don't know the pain of when you have someone that you care about, that you consider a son, and you can't help.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you've got GFW, who have a guy as their world champion that is, there's a lot of accusations about, There's audio evidence, there's police involved, and they have done nothing about it. And I know Ryan Satin from Pro Wrestling Sheet reached out to them, and the what came back was they weren't going to do anything. And I think that says far more about the moral compass or good intention of Global Force Wrestling. There's none. And they should be ashamed of themselves. And
utterly.
Yeah, just pure bad form, I think, from them.
The evidence is overwhelming with that. You know what I mean?
Even at its base, don't you go... But you know what? They shouldn't have put their world title on him.
It's a powder keg, Kenny, and you don't get too close to the explosion, you know?
Yep, it's... So, yeah. Anyway, I know people have asked us about it, so...
Yeah, might as well. No, that's where I went ahead and started going with it. And I refuse to listen to the audio because it's just sad. You know, you don't need to surround yourself with that kind of negativity if it's nothing that you can change directly.
I also don't want to give that kind of stuff hits.
Yeah, right. No. That's the other thing too. Is it's dirty. It's like releasing 911 calls and things of that nature. It's bad. It should be turned over to the police. Let the police handle it.
Yeah, and also, while we're on
it's not our business. We're not the police who are investigating it.
Also, if you get a chance, John Adams, one of our listeners, gave me a recommendation to watch the new Netflix documentary, Nobody Speaks, Trials of the Free Press, which covers the Hogan-Gawker trial and goes into a lot of other... Listen... If you ever want to pay $50 to have me and either David or Sandra sit and talk about it, I would love to. It's so interesting. Sure. It's so good. And it's really interesting because it talks about the press and about what people release. And, you know, like, is releasing a sex tape, is that journalism? Should that still be protected? And I'm kind of the belief of, like, I of course believe in free press, but I think there are ethical limits that there should be, and I just think that 911 calls and autopsy reports and sex tapes and all that shit, I just think it's crappy journalism.
Yeah, it's just vulturism. I'm
Hulk Hogan's my favorite of all time. If I somehow, you know, if Hulk Hogan died and I, you know, happened to be in the city at the time and went to, like, a vigil or something, and somehow Hulk Hogan's body was taken past me, there is not a chance in hell that you would see me taking a picture of that and putting it on social media. But there are
taking
some people
a selfie would... with dead Hulk Hogan body?
And some people
just
would.
Just like, hey, everybody, look at me. Oh, yeah, people are horrible people. We've already touched on that numerous times in this podcast.
People are terrible.
I think that's the general takeaway from today's podcast, is people are terrible.
So anyway, Bray Wyatt wins, beats Seth Rollins. He then
leaves. Oh yeah, wrestling.
Bray Wyatt leaves very quickly, as quickly as he has ever left. And then we have The Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel come out to attack Rollins. Dean Ambrose ends up coming out in the end to make the save, and smashes The Miz with chair shots, and Ambrose music hits as Rollins kind of sits in the corner wondering what's happening. And Corey Graves, again, the excellent commentator that he is, says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yep.
Setting up beautifully.
Just the best. It's a nice story to tell, too, I think.
And I think I'm actually Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose against the Miztourage. I'm in. Give me that at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I'm all right with it. Why not? Let's do that.
That
could be fun.
Here's the question. We cut backstage to Kurt Angle. He's on the phone. He tells the person on the phone, you know, come next week and we'll tell the world together. You don't have anything to be ashamed of. Yeah, and I hope you don't feel ashamed of me. I want you to come to TV next week and we'll tell the whole world together. I love you. And he hangs up the phone.
Oh.
So next week at Raw in Nashville...
We'll be Dixie Carter, ladies and gentlemen.
Who do you think it is?
I mean, logic would dictate Stephanie McMahon.
I'm going to tell you, if Stephanie McMahon and Kurt Angle are having an affair, I am all in. Because...
Yeah.
Fuck
no,
it.
I mean, it would be brilliant, but I don't think that would be too good, Kenny. They can't give us anything that good.
I know why they're doing that. If they do it that way, I know why. Because, so here's how it would go, right? So I want you to do a bit of role play, right?
Oh, all right. Here we go. I'm ready.
Okay, you're Vince.
God damn.
I'm Paul. So, Vince, Kurt wants to have another match. And,
does he, pal?
And I think we should do it. I think it's a great idea. But I think we need to make it as big as possible. So I think it needs to
the
be...
The bigger, the better.
I think it needs to be me and him. Because, look, I can take care of him. And, like, we had that big program before. But, like, you know, I was thinking about it. And I think that maybe Steph and him have to have an affair. Maybe that's how we do it. And then they're the heels. And I'm the babyface. And we do it at SummerSlam. But like, Vince, I was thinking about it, and you know, if they were the adulterers, like, we need to send people home happy at SummerSlam, right? So,
right.
I think if Kurt Angle comes back and has his match in WWE, he should be the heel and I should be the babyface and I should beat him. And that's why Triple H is in the position that he's in, and he's a fucking genius, and I'm all in for it. Bring it on.
Bring on those provocative adulterers.
I'm just saying, Triple H is the babyface, and Stephanie and Kurt Angle as sickening heel adulterers, I'm in.
I don't know if they would do that, though. They're kind of positioning Kurt to be sympathetic in this, almost.
Yeah,
he asked Corey, you know, he goes, you know, do you think, Corey, you know, he was like, this is going to ruin my career. And Corey was like, no, people love you. It won't ruin your career.
What does Cody Graves know?
A lot.
I
think the bigger question is Corey in on all this?
Well, you see, that's the other question. But what I think would be the best thing is that when Kurt comes out and he's like, okay, we need to tell the world together. And then Dixie's music hits and she comes out and he's like, Dixie, what are you doing here? And she's like, I'm just here to say hi, darling. And then she leaves.
Oh my God.
Just bring it out for a wee swear. Why not?
Yeah. Like the Teddy Long thing at, Mania, at Raw After Mania,
The
Hall of Fame GM. And then he comes out, playa.
Telling you. What I really want to see is I just want to see that, like, Dixie Carter ruined a wrestling company, but yet she's the one that got to Raw. Like, I think her incompetence should be rewarded.
Yeah, no, I'm all about it, man. I'm all about it. I think that's great. But, yeah, so, I mean, I
would be very surprised if it's anybody else apart from Dixie or Stephanie. It seems like it has to be one of them.
Yeah, like, do you think it's some sort of affair, or do you think it's there's a lot of speculation that it may be that Kurt had an affair long ago or something, and one of the superstars is his son or daughter.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm seeing that speculation pop up a little bit, and from no real credible source, but I thought it was a good speculation.
Do you know the thing is, though, is, and I actually think that Raw has been the better show since WrestleMania.
Absolutely. In my opinion, it's not even close. I mean, Braun Strowman alone is better than anything on either show.
But also, like, you've got the rise of Samoa Joe, you had the mystery of Enzo and Cass, you have the thing with Kurt Angle and Corey Graves, you have the Hardy Boys tearing it up in the tag team scene. Like, there's a lot going on in Raw that, like, I think it's been pretty good. So, I'm...
Yeah.
And next week, like, you've got Angle and his secret, and you've got Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns. That's a pretty big show.
No, it is. It is. It's the type of show that would get people talking. So, I'm all about it, man. I think it's really cool.
David, where can people find you on Twitter?
Show me all the money that you've donated to animal shelters on Twitter at... Zoopsoul, that's Zoopsoul. I am great. I'm always in the right whenever I get into arguments with my friends, Kenny. Except whenever I argue with you, because we don't argue, because we're the best friends.
We're besties. BFFs.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. BFFs. The BBFFs. Best butt-fucking friends forever. So there you go.
I would like to, on a serious note, say that when I was 7 years old, my parrot died. He was called Tim. What actually happened was, this is a true story, that my mum forgot to feed him for 2 weeks over the Christmas period.
Aww.
And he died. But what Tim wanted for me back when I was like five was he desperately wanted Iron Brew to sponsor any podcast that I do in the future. So I would like to invite all of you to the Google Hangout fundraiser where we mourn the loss of Tim. And yeah, we raise money for Iron Brew to sponsor Inside the Ropes. I hope that you'll all be there. It would really mean a lot to me. And you can follow me and you know, RSVP at KennyMC1985 on Twitter. I'd really appreciate all your support and your well wishes.
Yeah, yeah, for certain. We need to honor Tim's memory and get Iron Brew to sponsor Inside the Ropes.
It's what you would have wanted.
It is. It truly is. Bat and food, apparently.
He was very ahead of his time.
Yeah.
He knew Twitter was coming in 1992.
A true visionary.
A paratier. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for being involved. Thank you for subscribing on Patreon. Thank you for coming to our live shows and all of the above. We will be back next week with more. David and I might even get you on Patreon later on this week for a wee podcast. Thank you very much, everyone. Goodbye.
Take care and be nice to animals and each other, because in the end of the day, we're all animals, folks.
For fuck's sake.